corners of the globe to your ears. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for this week. You're hearing my voice and seeing my face. For those of you watching on YouTube, that means that there is no Hunter. The Great American Mustache is not here this week. Couldn't make it. So got joining me briefly, because he's got a meeting regarding a film that we discussed last week, to my right, this way. Mr. Eric Zoldivar on camera. Holy shit.
First time.
Nice to see.
And last
and you better tell your wife in the background to stop undressing on camera, man, in the mirror.
Hey.
And down below,
right there,
like in Highway to Hell, is in this picture, is Mr. John Grace over in Colorado.
Yeah. Great to be here.
All right.
As always.
And we are discussing the Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung. Not really a Jackie Chan film, is it,
John? Not at all. No.
That's a name push of the film Winners and Sinners from 1983. But before we do that, because Eric's going to leave shortly, we're going to do our whip out your junk section. So we'll get to Eric. Fucking right, Stuart. That way. On the right. First. Whip it out, and let's see what you got.
Here it is. It is a Carter Brown novel named, I think it's Mirrored, isn't it? Oh, Horror.
He's an Australian writer.
That's right. Never spent any time in Los Angeles, but he's written about Los Angeles, about 200 books, probably, and then his ghostwriters, perhaps.
Jesus.
Or you could see it's an acronym for a kind of woman's liberation movement. I think it stands for. You see? Women's Hereditary and Obligatory Revolutionary Establishment. That's what it stands for.
It's just an excuse to have the letters W.
Of course it is. Yeah.
It's like sells paperbacks.
It's like the Cheech and Chong skit twat from their album, or Tactical Women's of Tack Team, wherever it was. It was just yeah, that's all it is.
I also got, actually, I did get, oh goodness, I'm going to have to go run and get it. I did get the Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, the novelization of the film. Which is significant because I have a feeling that these two models are the same in the cover. Give me one moment.
Oh, like a female Fabio, I guess.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Or so they shot the same male model twice as Watson and Sherlock. I don't know.
So here's Private Life, a movie I don't even like, but the cover was really cool.
Same artist as the Carter Brown.
Probably, but there she
Robert
is.
Robert McGinnis.
And then there's that one.
Very likely the same model. It's the same artist.
It is the same model. The facial structure seems to be the same. Hair is colored differently.
Yeah. It's the only difference.
That's what I got.
Where do you pick these books up from? Are they secondhand ones?
There's a bookstore in town called the Iliad in North Hollywood. It's very good and it's very cheap, unlike a lot of used bookstores around here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What sort of price were you looking at for those sorts of things?
Everything was under $2.
Oh, wow. That's cheap.
Okay. Each item.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get some here that are really good, but you can get them. They'll just throw them out at $1. You get five for $3 sometimes. I've got a bunch of Star Trek novels in there somewhere. I thought, I don't even read them. And you see them on eBay, they're going for 25 each. I thought, what? Who the hell wants these? But
Trekkies.
They do. All right, that's all you got?
That's it.
All right, John.
All right. I got the Joseph Quill box set.
You cinematic bastard. I was sitting there today saying, John's going to show the Joseph Quo box set. That's how I said to you earlier. I said, I think it is. I'm going to push that button.
Yeah, it's exactly what you... I ordered it from Eureka, so I got it probably right before Amazon customers did. And it was worth it. It was actually cheaper from Eureka than getting it from any dealer or anything. Just order straight from them. You don't even pay for postage. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so far, I started with the two worst films on the set, Shaolin Kids and 36 Deadly Styles. Both are pretty lame, but they look fantastic. So I'm looking forward to watching the good ones next, you know, like Seven Grandmasters and 18 Bronzemen of Shaolin, and then Return of the 18 Bronzemen. Like those are the good ones on there. Also, World of Drunken Master is pretty decent, and there might be a surprise or two on here because a lot of these films I have not watched in years, and it was always on really bad pan and scan tapes.
World of Drunken Master is one I want us to do in the future because we've done Seven Grandmasters years ago.
Right.
Years ago. But World of Drunken Master, when I get that set, I've just been holding out for the Black Friday sale, which starts tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Here and in the UK. And I'm thinking it's either going to drop or it's going to go up. And I don't know.
They claim they only made 2,000. I don't know how true that really is.
That's the problem right there. I don't know what sort of limits are left, what quantities are left of that worldwide. So I might just place it today because I think it's going for $80
Australian. Right, I paid 65, so that makes sense.
About the same.
That's about the same as 80.
Thereabouts. Yeah. So I'll just bite the bullet today.
And, it's worth it. You won't feel bad about it. Seven Grandmasters looks amazing.
Oh, you look at it.
This terrific looks here, like in HD.
Yeah, my DVD died. God, back in 2013.
This is a great replacement.
43-minute mark, it just freezes up. The layer rot. That's it. It's gone.
You played it too many times, right?
Oh, I got played to death. Laser rot.
It is one of those you could play over and over again, and it's just endlessly fun.
Yeah.
Because 90% fighting.
Yeah. I've actually become more accustomed with Seven Grandmasters in the original. Is it Mandarin? Are they used or Cantonese?
I believe Mandarin. Because they're Taiwanese films by origin. So they're
I still like the English dub they have on there, but I'm preferring more the Mandarin track with the subtitles these days.
Well, it gives you a different level with it, I think. You take it to another level, or you watch it on a different level when you watch it in Mandarin or Cantonese, whichever you choose.
It's always a different movie. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Even like the Bruce Lee's, they're different movies. Way of the Dragon in its original language and its original subtitles. It's a different movie.
Yeah, it is. It is a bit different.
Okay. All right. Well, is that all you got? You got something else? Nothing else?
No, that's it for me.
That's it for you? All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I better kill that. Show the junk I've got real quick. There's not much this week. It would have been one, which I'll get on a rant to real quick. This is the last of the stuff I got off NES last week. Idle Hands. Don't know what the hell that is. Some British show from the 70s. But it does have... Does have Phil Daniels, who I do like quite a bit as an actor. So there is that.
There's going to be thousands of these sitcom shows from England in the 70s, it seems like.
I'd never heard of it. I do like Phil Daniels quite a bit. Nesbitt sent me The Odd Couple, season 3. The Odd Couple, season 4. That's the thing with Nesbitt. When he sends shit, it's a grab bag. You don't know what's getting sent to you. This is one.
It's just what he watched that month and he's tired of, right?
No, he is. He has more stuff for you coming. Oh, okay. No worries. Then. This one was released on DVD back in 2006, but it wasn't the complete 17 episodes. It was only 12 put out by Image Entertainment. It's now being released on the 50th anniversary 4-disc effort with all 17 episodes. Lancelot Link, Secret Chimp. You guys ever seen this?
What is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a show from 1970. Ran for, what was it, John? One season?
I believe so. It was a Saturday morning show, I think.
It was. And it is just basically a bunch of chimps role-playing as secret agents. It's like Get Smart with just four chimpanzees. That's all it is. And, yeah, all 17 episodes. The third disc is the bonus. So the 17 episodes spread over disc one and two. Disc three bonus features. Disc four is the good one. On each episode, there's a band. There's a like a psychedelic hippie band full of chimps pretending to play instruments called the Evolution Revolution. And it's got on there the album that came out in 1970 on CD in this box set. So,
jeez,
yeah, that was a nice. This is still going, but it's not. It's a limited edition one. So that is that. Finally, I've got on Blu-ray. Came in the other day.
Whoops! Zapped.
There you go. Now, that's not the cover it came with. That's a custom cover that I print up off the site I got because the people, the artists in there, are sick of the covers that come with it, like they're shit.
Oh. Yeah,
the one that came with it.
I don't understand why they don't just always use the poster artwork.
That's disgraceful. That's,
yeah. What
the fuck is this? This is terrible. So somebody on there said, nope, I don't like it. I'm going back with the original poster. And they've even made an effort to do the back look more like a proper release.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm really tired of lame companies being lame with their releases when we're shelling out good dollars for them. Sick of it. I'm sure I'm not the only one. And that's it. That's all I've got this week. I would have had The Darkness new album Motor Heart last night. But those motherfuckers over at JB Hi-Fi said, come on down, we got two copies here. Okay, cool. See you in about 15 minutes. I'm on the way to work anyway. Get into the store. Hey, looking for The Darkness Motor Heart. Oh, yeah, got two copies. Just give us a minute. 25 minutes later. Oh, we're still looking for it. I said, how hard can it be? Where have you stashed it? Oh, we have got it. I said, look, you've wasted my time. 25 minutes and you haven't got it. I said, this is ridiculous. I'll go elsewhere. So I don't have it. And I wanted it so bad.
Damn.
I'll have to try one of their other stores tonight a bit further out, but it's still on the way to work.
They held you back 25 minutes on the way to work? Did you
25? I mean, yeah. I mean, I was early anyway, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And, I thought I was just by the time the 25 minutes was up, I said, screw this. I mean, I want it, but I'm not gonna run late. I mean, I still got to work way on time, but not good enough. So yeah. I think from now on when they say they've got it, I'm gonna say, yes, I want it in your hand. You looking at it, otherwise don't tell me it's in stock on your computer, otherwise I won't bother. Screw that for a joke. So yeah, that will be on the next week's one. Along with some others that are coming in.
I need to pick that up too.
Yeah. All right, boys. I got a meeting in about 10 minutes. So I got
Eric.
And I still got to eat and everything. So do it.
All right, brother. Take care.
All righty. Have a good one.
Bye. Let's get on to Winners and Sinners from 1983.
Yep.
All right. Gonna take a wild guess. You've seen this, right?
Yes.
Many times.
Several times.
Okay. Now it says that it's part of a Lucky Stars trilogy or something. Do you want to explain what that is?
Well, that's a loose definition. What it is they made this film. This was a response to Aces Go Places, which was a huge hit for Cinema City, and I think was at the time was the biggest Hong Kong box office hit of all time. And so what it was Sammo Hung really liked. He loved The Sting. One of his favorite movies is The Sting. Another of his favorite movies, well, like he likes The Sting. He likes Jaws. He loves Blood Brothers. It's a Shaw Brothers film. And Dragon Gate Inn, which is a King Hu movie from the 60s. But he really loves The Sting. So he wanted to do a con artist comedy or like a elaborate what would you call elaborate scam comedy or whatever. I'm not sure if there's really a genre name for that. And what he did was, whereas Aces Go Places had Carl Macca, who was a real popular comedy actor in Hong Kong, and Sam Hui, who was, of course, like the biggest singing star in Hong Kong at the time, and Sylvia Chang, who was a respected actress. So Sammo like stacks the deck with the actors playing the, I guess they'd be the sinners. In addition to Jackie Chan, who's pretty much a cameo role, we'll get into that later. He's got John Shamm. He's got Richard Ng. He's got Charlie Chin. He's got Stanley Siu Fan Feng. And for the female lead, he's got Cherry Chung, who at that time had started out as she was supposed to be a big starlet at Shaw Brothers. And then Shaw Brothers was shutting down their production of films down to like 10%, you know, like from they probably cut back about 80% of their film output. And so a lot of those actors went to work at Golden Harvest. And of course, Sammo was doing this big comedy. So he had worked for Cherry Chung, who's really lovely. And of course, was on her way to being a big star. So he has this con artist comedy. Winners of Sinners is a gigantic hit. It might have actually outgrossed Aces Go Places by then, when it came out the following year, being Golden Harvest's response. But and with the Jackie Chan cameo, doesn't hurt, because you can put him on the poster and it'll do well in Japan. Then they started to film Winners and Sinners 2. And there's photos of the shooting of this film in Golden Movie News, which was the Golden Harvest movie magazine at the time. That was a big way to promote product back then. In Hong Kong, you had Cinemark and you had Golden Movie News. And when Shaw Brothers was doing a gigantic output every year, it was called Southern Screen. That was their movie magazine to promote to the housewives of Hong Kong with the next, you know, big movies coming out. So there's these photos of Winners and Sinners 2 with Cherry Chung and the rest of the cast in those outfits, in the painter outfits. And looks like they were shooting some stuff. And the film was never, it was never finished, never completed, as if it was abandoned during mid-shoot, or maybe they shot a week of footage and just said, this isn't working out, or the script was stolen. Sometimes that happens and it showed up in another film already. This was a typical occurrence in Hong Kong. It wasn't unusual for Golden Harvest to stop filming something that they didn't feel was working, and they would just abandon the project. And it happened at Shaw Brothers as well. Right. So there was... What Sammo did instead was he did a similar film, a follow-up called My Lucky Stars. I believe every character has different names, but it used a lot of the same actors. Richard Ng is in it, Charlie Chin, Stanley Siu Fan Feng. John Shamm is not in My Lucky Stars. They brought in Eric Chang instead. Eric Chang, coincidentally, directed the first two Aces Go Places movies, which shows you how small that market is. And the My Lucky Stars is actually a different... My Lucky Stars and Twinkle Twinkle Lucky Stars are two... That's a different series, really. But the way they packaged them with Eureka, they put out this Blu-ray set earlier this year that I need to purchase eventually. They put Winners and Sinners and My Lucky Stars and Twinkle Twinkle Lucky Stars all in the same set. And it's probably very much worthwhile, because stylistically, they're very similar. My Lucky Stars... has a lot more action, and so does Twinkle Twinkle Lucky Stars. They amped up the Jackie Chan fight action, and Yen Bu is also in it, fighting you know, the fighters like Dick Wei and those guys. So you get some really good kung fu, or modern kung fu new wave action in those films. Winners and Sinners, as you probably noticed watching it, not actually an action-packed movie by technical terminology.
No, not really. It's definitely more of a comedy.
Right. It's like The Sting with an occasional fight scene, basically.
Yeah.
And some great car stunts and roller skating stunts.
Oh, the roller skating, yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah. And especially, you know, these guys are the ones doing their own stunts.
Yeah.
You know, Sammo, Jackie. It's amazing to watch.
I should mention, though, at this time, some of the roller skating stunts were, of course, done by like two different skaters who could do some of the stuff. Jackie did it's interesting. He did the roller skating through the fire circles. Like, he did that stuff, and he did some of the riding between the cars. But I know some of the crazier stunts were done by two specialists,
right,
with roller skates.
Okay. No worries. But the thing I found this film, and this is, I think, about my third time watching it, is I just struggled a little bit with, putting together the plot of what was going on.
Yeah.
It wasn't your basic three-act plot. It was, you know, stitch this piece here, stitch this piece here together, and you can form some sort of cohesive sort of outline of what's going on. Okay, like you said, there's the five guys they meet in prison. You see, the opening reminded me a little bit of Sorcerer, how you had three different acts of crimes going on, then they all come together. Right. Don't know if that might have been a little bit of a influence there for Sammo when he wrote this. I don't know.
It's possible. He cannibalizes from a lot of sources. That's pretty typical for him.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, after a while, I got the gist of what was going on. And it had been many, many years since I'd seen this thing. Now, let me ask you about why Jackie's role was so small in the film. What was
He was directing and starring in Project A at the time, which was a troubled production. So he was called to do some scenes for Winners and Sinners because his face on the poster means more box office, especially in Japan, where Sammo, I don't think, had quite been established as a star yet. So, but Jackie was a big draw in Japan, which was a good market for Golden Harvest. And for a Chinese star to be big in Japan, I think that was usually an exception. It wasn't a rule because, you know, the Japanese and the Chinese don't really dig each other too much, you know. But Jackie was really big in Japan for a while, and especially in the 80s. I think he was in the top five, along with like Michael J. Fox and Kevin Costner. So, big draw. So they would bring in Jackie for those, what's basically just a cameo, and to do some action scenes, just get him on the poster and just to tie things together at the end. I noticed in My Lucky Stars and Twinkle Twinkle Lucky Stars is a lot more Jackie appearance, a lot more Jackie action. Especially in My Lucky Star. So I think they knew they needed to ramp that up a bit. Sammo himself wasn't going to be enough of a draw. And nobody overseas is going to care about, you know, Stanley Fosu-Fung or John Cham or, you know, these guys who were huge in Hong Kong, but not really known outside that market.
Yep.
And John Cham and Richard Ng did their own series together, sort of a spinoff of this called Pom Pom and Hot Hot.
Yeah.
I think. Was it Mr. Pom Pom, something like that. It was a series like the Pom Pom series, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
like and it's in this along the similar style where they're like con artists. And Richard Ng has always been really good with the comedy. I mean, you probably remember from like the Michael Hui comedies. I think he's in Private Eyes.
And
another one. Yeah. I haven't watched those myself. I've not watched them in a long time.
Yeah,
but yeah, the. Like you notice, like there's no plot. It's not the three act structure that we're used to, probably because it was improvised. I think a lot of it was. And what they would typically do is they would shoot like these comedy scenes, almost like a Carry On film or something. And I think just kind of piece together a plot just to tie things together at the end with, you know, you got James Tien from the Bruce Lee films as the big mobster.
I didn't notice that. I was watching going, I know that face. God, what do I know that face? And I looked up the cast later ago. Shane from Big Boss, really? It's him?
Right.
There it is. Yeah. I have no idea.
Actually, yeah, it's...
I thought he would have been sort of retired from acting by that time, but it really was, a dozen years later from Big Boss?
Yeah, he still worked for Golden Harvest and still appeared in movies. I believe he did television. From what I understand, would not talk about Bruce Lee in interviews. So take that for what it's worth. And, of course, that's just a rumor. I should correct myself. The Richard Ng series... The series of Richard Ng and John Cham, the frizzy-haired guy, is not Pom Pom and Hot Hot. It's actually just Pom Pom. And then they made a movie called Return of Pom Pom. And then they did a team-up with one of the Hui brothers called Mr. Boo Meets Pom Pom. So it's just a really nutty... it's nutty. They're comedy spinoffs and subgenres and such.
So of that five, you know, you got Teapot, obviously, Sammo Hung. You got... exhaust pipe. Now, who's that guy who plays exhaust?
That's Richard Ng.
He was a comedian, right?
Yeah, and comedy actor. I mean, he actually one of his earliest films was Golden Needles, the movie that Chris Boggiali got the commentary gig on.
Oh, didn't know that.
Yeah, because he spoke perfect. Richard Ng speaks perfect English. Garrow actually had dinner with him when he was on the set of Once Upon a Time in China 5, and they had made a new Lucky Stars film. for the Christmas holidays. Jackie Chan wasn't in it. It was like, I forget if it was called Return of the Lucky Stars or something. And Richard Ng told Garo, yeah, we made a new Lucky Stars movie. Garo's all excited. Richard Ng said, don't bother. It's terrible. Don't even go see it. Don't watch it. Don't buy the laser disc. Just don't.
Yeah.
He goes, it's a bad movie. He goes, you know, he's like, I can tell you it's just a terrible film. They just did it as a quickie thing, you know, because that market was dying by then. Like Hong Kong's movie market really had a decline in quality after about 92.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. And this is about 96, I think, when Garo had dinner with Richard Ng. Mm-hmm. So it was, it's unfortunate. They're not really capable of making this type of comedy anymore, and they kind of lost that ability. I don't know why that is, but maybe it's just the current generation of directors, kind of like America, too far removed from the stuff that inspired the good quality movies in the 80s. Like, mm-hmm. like I've always said, you will find people have made good movies being inspired by the same things that inspired George Lucas to make Star Wars. But you will not find many good movies made by people inspired by Star Wars. You know, once you get to that level, you know, the Ramones will inspire great bands.
Who?
But yes, the Ramones. The Ramones will inspire great bands. But a band inspired by the Ramones probably is not going to inspire great bands or something. You know, like Green Day is not going to inspire awesome bands. You know?
They don't sound like the Ramones anyway.
They don't. They'd use the same, I think, like 3-chord structure or whatever, but no, they don't sound like it, not with their production. But they are inspired by them. Like, No Doubt is inspired by a lot of really cool ska bands, but No Doubt is not going to inspire really good bands, you know?
No.
Even though No Doubt themselves might be fun to listen to.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
You probably find bands like The Saints would be more inspired by the Ramones and inspiring than what bands like Green Day would be.
Right.
That's just my personal opinion.
But I think the Saints, I don't even know if they were inspired by the Ramones. I think they were just hitting at the same time. And I'm sure they heard the first Ramones record and might've said, okay, we'll take a little hint from this. But I think they were like 74 or 75. They're pretty early on. Radio Birdman. Yeah. Radio Birdman was Blue Oyster Cult inspired. I think they even admitted.
Oh, okay. Learn something new.
So it's like there's no, like supposedly the Saints, when they came to America and did a tour, they were booed because they had long hair. Because all the punks had short hair by then. Like only the Ramones were allowed to have long hair. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. Anyway, we better take a break and get to the Nesbitt piece. And we'll be back in a moment.
And now it's time for Rue Britannia with your foreign correspondent, the Nez.
This is your weekly briefing, and you are most welcome to it. In a move that will surprise nobody dandy, cast members of the Will Tappers and Shanters Club, ex-Princess Harry Markle and ex-Prince Meghan Markle, have yet again decided to throw rose petals out of their sedan chairs to the peasants by announcing that the term Megxit is misogynistic, quote-unquote. Where I take great exception and offence to sexist terms created by trolls and other members of the hoi polloi, complained the ginger ex-male who gave up his masculinity, military service and Dick Francis novels to pursue a new life under woke CRGT. I may enjoy living under the kosh, but it's not as if I served on the front line in Afghanistan, partied in Vegas, snorted cocaine off strippers' asses, whilst dressed up as a Nazi, the ginger exclaimed. I sure did, but thanks to her and Dawes, I now know full well that I can begin the process of formally atoning for all past sins. After all, in 5 years' time, she'll divorce me, financially bankrupt me, sue me for custody of the children, find another money-mag pants to financially suck the life force from, and leave me with nothing. Yes, Harry, but will it make you happy? and also on the subject of Nazi gold, ex-Prince Meghan Markle faces an appeal in the civil courts by the Mail on Sunday over her previous High Court trial, which ruled that the paper was in breach of privacy laws by publishing private correspondence between the ex-Prince Meghan and her estranged father. Not least since it now appears she allowed private correspondence to be used by her ghostwriters for the Markle's autobiography Finding Freedom. Freedom from what? Fuck knows. Anyway, Little Miss Dynamite is unrepentant about using the media on the one hand whilst pursuing the mythical search for privacy via Netflix. Where are my fucking trainers? The XX actress bellowed to staffers whilst actually handing out soup to the homeless in LA whilst in front of a media scrum. Besides, she said, the Mail on Sunday is being so unreasonable in their behaviour. Since it's all about me, why can't they just shut up and get out of the way? Meanwhile, the Mail on Sunday declined to comment, this being a euphemism for private derision. Which is to say, perjury under oath in a civil court in England is a criminal offence. In other court circulars, a senior aide to Prince Charles has resigned this week after it was revealed he offered a UK passport and a knighthood by the prince to a Saudi Arabian donor. Which, putting it mildly somewhat, is illegal. This even before we get to the accusations of rape surrounding fugitive Prince Andrew alleged by Virginia Giuffre. It's difficult to know what Christmas is going to look like for the royal family this year, although murder squad detectives near Balmoral Castle have been placed on standby over the course of the festive season. On the subject of mindlessness, the BBC have broken off all connections with gay lesbian campaign pressure group Stonewall. This over concerns that the group's campaign of terror and threats against anybody or anything that believes that anybody who states and believes that transgenderism doesn't exist. After all, it's not as if a person can change the gender of their own DNA and chromosomes. Give me full agreement and validation on my questionable as ambivalacious gender, or I'll shout at you with my rainbow-coloured megaphone, screamed rainbow flag-wearing Nancy Ritter, spokeswoman, for the light on earthy pressure grip. This as they celebrated the nation's first rainbow-coloured zebra traffic crossing in London this week. We think this is an amazingly progressive move on our part. We always wanted a rainbow-coloured LGBT flag set of traffic crossings, and here they are, she triumphed. Indeed, can't wait for motorists in the capital to drive over the flag and accidentally express their disapproval. And finally, back in the greenhouse, and the Prime Minister celebrated the conclusion of the COP26 climate change conference in Glasgow this week, and finally achieving absolutely nothing whatsoever. It's an original achievement in going all out to achieve nothing, said Shirley at a Downing Street press conference on Sunday afternoon, wearing the facial demeanour of a student on day release from his Oxford College. This to seemingly nobody in particular. Why, he said, flying to her from Glasgow whilst burning thousands of gallons of fossil fuel is the type of immoral and hypocritical parry that only I could make with a straight face, said the Prime Minister, with a straight face. Naturally, I shall continue to use a fossil fuel-burning car on a daily basis to set a two-faced and moral example to the nation for the public to follow. I mean, I've always wanted to be a 15th century medieval court jester, so here I am living the dream for you, said the prince.
And we are back. Yes, the royal family would not be happy about Nesbitt's thoughts.
Always a scorcher, that Nez.
Yes. Mom would not be impressed with what she heard, but the truth hurts, Mom. All right. Back to Winners and Sinners. Talk a bit more about this film, about how it became so successful and what you know about it.
Well, you know, the audience at that time, I think, was burning out on the classic kung fu stuff. So if you did like a Joseph Kwo type of movie or something like Sammo made great stuff like The Prodigal Son, or the Shaw Brothers were making movies like Legendary Weapons of Kung Fu or Legendary Weapons of China. The audience was burned out on that, kind of the same way Americans got burned out on Westerns. I think that's the old cliche, or they get burned out on any genre. And so this idea of the action comedy, kind of in that Burt Reynolds mold, where you got funny characters, but you'll have these incredible car stunts, like a Smokey and the Bandit type of movie. That was just really appealing to them. And of course, the car crashes in this film there is, you know, graphic or, you know, just as expansive and as exciting as anything you see in an American film at the time. Like they have what is it, like a 30 car pile up in this film, like in mid film, that's just pretty incredible. It's like, it looks like it's all done in one take. I'm not even sure. Maybe it was.
Yeah, I was sitting there watching it going, this is like that goddamn, what was that film? Gone in 60 Seconds film. The Licky one. Where
right.
It's one car pile up after another.
Right. Because like James Bond movies, very popular in Hong Kong. So if they got to see their own stars, be it comedy or action stars, in like these big stunt action sequences that are as vast as anything you'd see in a Bond movie, they love that. Like they really dug it. And that's probably one of the reasons it was a huge hit. And Sammo was really on fire at that time. And all the like characters, like, you know, actors like Richard Ng, John Sham, they were draws because I think they were also seen on television. John Cham, I found out reading up on this, he's actually a big political activist in Hong Kong and would lead a Remember Tiananmen Square march like every year in Hong Kong on the anniversary of the event, which of course, you know, mainland China, not really crazy about that because they want everybody, they're trying to memory hole that whole thing. And John Cham just brings it up every time. Richard Ng and Charlie Chen. I think Charlie Chen is actually a TV star. And of course the gag here, like he's a big stud on TV, but the gag here is all the women turn him down that he hits on, you know, even though he's this handsome dude. And then, but none of the women are interested in him. So there's little end jokes there for the local audience. Like I was surprised this may have done well in Japan. I've seen the Japanese version and, there's no translation because Japanese video never did that unless they, where you were lucky enough to get an English dub Golden Harvest release from Japanese video. But they would have like this pop song sung by a Japanese pop singer in English. Every time Jackie Chan would do something, this loud pop song would play over the roller skating scene or during a fight scene. It was pretty annoying. But yeah. I don't have that copy. I don't think I have that copy anymore, but it was like a weird pop tune. And of course, somebody who knows the Golden Harvest catalog real well might be able to pinpoint it on YouTube or something. But it was like this song in English, like he's a brave cop or something like that. I'll have to ask a friend of mine to see if he can provide it. Maybe we'll put a link in another episode. Yeah. But it was pretty fun. Also, I believe one version I saw had a joke with, you know, that scene when they're at that market. Like the whole cast, like the cast is at that market and
yeah.
You see, I think it's Shaq Kin is doing like a Wong Fei Hung tribute thing. And they have that Hungar teacher who was in Stephen Chow's Kung Fu Hustle. And he was also at Snake in the Eagle's Shadow and a bunch of other films. His name escapes me right now, but apparently in the original Cantonese print in Hong Kong, a bunch of old people sing Young Turks.
That's in the one I've got.
Oh, it's in your copy. Okay. It's in the Cantonese version. The English sub I've got doesn't have that joke.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. No, the Rod Stewart Young Turks song.
Yeah. It's like the old people are singing or like there's a folk band singing it or something. I think it was in one version I saw years ago.
It's on the Hong Kong Legends DVD I've got.
Okay.
And it's like a brother and sister act or whatever they are doing. Yeah. Young Turks. So that was going to bring it up. I thought that was like a common scene in all the releases of this film.
Right. Yeah. It's not in every scene because you'd have to pay royalties, I guess. But they, of course, the joke there is like, why is this folk singing duo singing Young Turks, this, you know, American, you know, at that time, probably disco pop hit, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And so there's gags like that don't always make different translations. Like you get an English dub, they're not going to put a reference to something that they may have to pay a royalty on. So it's removed. And I doubt it's in the second English. They actually did a second English dub of this in the late 90s when Media Asia acquired the Golden Harvest catalog because they didn't like those British sounding voices on the original 80s dubs. And they also did it with 70s films too. They didn't want it on, like they didn't want the British dubbing. They wanted the, like a bunch of guys in California dubbing it or something. It was, and of course it's really inferior. It's pretty horrible they did that. But Fox DVD did that on a release of this here in the States. I was always surprised this got as many American home video releases as it did because it's just really not like an action-packed movie. And I always thought when they were trying to sell this stuff to America, they would sell it on the stunts and the action and not, you know, Sammo Hung playing a character named Teapot. Or what. Yeah. It's like, you know, just kind of the weird Hong Kong Cantonese humor that doesn't always translate, or it's inspired by British comedy that was never big in America, like Carry On. You know, it's just weird that this is one of the films they picked to promote to American audiences or consumers.
When I watched this, and like I said, this is about the third time I'd seen it. When I was watching that fight towards the end, you know, when they had that big sort of double cross with the briefcase and all that, and Samo's fighting, I said, a guy that size has absolutely no right being as fast and as good as he is as a martial artist. I think he's better than Jackie Chan. And that's, I'm not knocking Jackie Chan, obviously, as a martial artist, but Samo is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's great in this. Like, I think he really hit a peak with that movie Eastern Condors, because it's very, very action-packed, and Samo lost a lot of weight. He's actually thin in the film. Or as thin as he's going to get. See, he claims he lived on a diet of just chicken. That's all he would eat for like a month, so he could lose weight for the film, because he's playing a soldier. You don't want to look fat.
No.
And but the fight scenes he did in that was like his most incredible, like modern, like what I would call modern fighting. Like if you watch an old Samo movie like Warriors 2 or Prodigal Son, where they're doing Wing Chun, you know, they're doing classical kung fu.
Yeah.
And in these modern films, he's basically doing Hapkido techniques, because they had a Hapkido teacher teach the Golden Harvest stunt crew in the early 70s how to do all those kicks. Because when Bruce Lee started making movies in Hong Kong, he was doing the type of these high kicks to the head, like the spinning back kick or a roundhouse kick or a big flying side kick. That didn't exist in Chinese Kung Fu. Like their systems don't, like Southern Chinese Kung Fu systems don't have that type of kicking. Wing Chun doesn't have it. Hungar doesn't have it. So, but Hapkido has it. And Bruce may have learned those kicks. Some of those kicks, I think he learned from Chuck Norris, Jun Ri, American Taekwondo people.
Yeah.
So, and others came from a guy he learned I think it's like a Northern style. He learned like a Northern form from, you know, the scene in Enter the Dragon when he's exercising in his guest quarters, and Bob Wall comes and gets him, and he's doing like these three kicks, and it looks like he's doing a form. Those were the Northern Chinese Kung Fu kicks that he learned from a guy in Seattle. Like those are not Korean style kicks. So to get guys like Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung and Yen Biu and Angela Mao Ying, all these performers at Golden Harvest to kick like Bruce Lee, they brought in Korean Hapkido specialists. And also they were making movies in South Korea, so they had access to Hapkido teachers, and those guys trained in Hapkido, and which has a lot of those really cool high kicks and flying kicks and everything that audiences like seeing, thanks to Bruce.
Yeah.
So that's one thing they had over a lot of the guys at Shaw Brothers, because none of the guys at Shaw Brothers could do that stuff until Taekwondo got popular in Hong Kong in the 70s. That's another weird aspect of the films. Yeah. So they're doing Hapkido. So when they're doing these modern fight scenes, they're doing a lot of Hapkido takedowns, punches, the flying moves and all that stuff. That's what Samo's actually doing. And he is so fast because he has his reflexes from being bent like a pretzel when he was in Peking Opera when he was a little kid. Have you ever seen the movie Painted Faces?
No, I have not.
Make an effort to see that movie. It's a slightly fictionalized version of what Jackie and Samo and Yen Biu and probably some others that we can't name yet suffered through in Peking Opera when they were kids from their master, who was pretty brutal. And the funny thing is that really cruel, sadistic master who like would just, you know, bend those kids into pretzels and to learn tumbling for Peking Opera. He stars in a Joseph Kwon movie that's on that box set that I held up. Like they gave him a movie. It's like, oh, Jackie and Samo's teacher, he's gonna get his own movie. And of course he's like in his 50s, he has a walk-in cane, he can't he's doubled for all the stuff, he's doubled for like all the big action and everything. You'll be able to see the movie when you get the set, but yeah, it's called The Old Bastard. It's a fun movie because it's like a slice of the 70s, and it was filmed in Los Angeles, but yeah, it was promoted on, oh, here's Jackie and Samo's teacher. Oh, look at him doubled for almost everything because he's an old man now. He's basically a cripple.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was probably the first film where Samo did that 80s style of fight editing where it's a lot of breakdowns. Usually when you watch like 70s kung fu films, it's like a master shot. You'll see Bruce throw 10 kicks and somebody will throw a kick back at him and it's all in one take.
Yeah.
And here it's all breakdowns. It's like Jackie kicks, then it cuts to Jackie punching, and then, you know, flipping, doing a backflip up, or Sammo throwing a kick and a punch, and then he cuts to him flipping off of a box or whatever the hell. That was a bit jarring to me the first time I watched this, because I was so used to the 70s. You know, our video market in the 80s was a bit behind.
Yeah.
We only had the 70s Jackie Chan and the 70s Sammo Hung movies, if you can find them on video. So when I saw footage of this in a Bruce Lee documentary, they said, and Golden Harvest has new stars like Jackie Chan. And they showed his first fight scene from Winners and Sinners.
Yeah.
And it was cut in a way where, like, I was like, wait a minute, what the hell are they doing in this editing? What the hell are they doing? You know, are they speeding it up? What, you know, it looked too quick to me. So it was funny how jarring that was to see the first time. And watching it this week for probably the third or fourth time, I'm like, wow, I forgot what an impression it made on me. I was like, what the hell are they doing in their movies? They look like cartoons now. What? I don't get this. You know, it took a little getting used to.
Yeah.
You had to accept that these were live action cartoons or live action comic books.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
With the trilogy of the films, which one would you say is the best of the three?
Oh, My Lucky Stars, without a doubt.
Oh, really?
Better than this one. Yeah. Yeah. Now the comedy in this, okay, the scene where Richard Ng is convinced that he can turn himself invisible and they backfires on him. That's a great scene. That's funnier than anything in My Lucky Stars. In fact, a lot of the stuff in My Lucky Stars involves the Lucky Stars, who are basically most of the same guys in this film, trying to cop a feel off of Sybil Hu for like an hour. I don't think it's going to hold up too well with the pound Me Too audience these days. Mm. I wouldn't show it to your wife or girlfriend, but so that stuff doesn't age too well, but the action scenes are a lot longer and there's a lot more of them in My Lucky Stars. Like there's Jackie taking on Japanese Yakuzas and ninjas in a haunted house, a gimmicky haunted house at a Japanese amusement park, that's really cool stuff. Really well-edited action. The funny thing is Jackie looked better when he was directed by Sammo than he looked directed in his own movies. Like when he directed himself. Okay. I don't know why that is. Like Sammo has a better eye for making Jackie look tougher and more aggressive.
It goes back to our discussion we had on Psycho when we spoke about Anthony Perkins was better directed by somebody else than what he was directing himself for three.
It's like they see like their advantages differently than the audience does, and different than somebody like another director who appreciates them. It's like, no, wait, you know, this is what you get. This is how you got to film yourself. This is what you need to be doing in the movie. You know, this is what your fans want. Yeah. Like, cause they're in their own bubble most of the time, you know, Jackie's certainly not immune to that. And also the funny thing is after Winners and Sinners had wrapped, Project A, I believe, was such a troubled production. Golden Harvest asked Sammo to take over the film because Jackie couldn't finish it.
Mm.
And so Sammo took over the film and actually kind of ghost directed a portion of Project A. And every time I watch it, I kind of look at it. I go, I think this is where Sammo took over, because you start to see the fight coverage is a little different. The editing is a bit different. The cutting, the way they're filmed, you know, Sammo has to put in a scene of him gambling and looking like a boss gambler. And then they're going to try to beat him up after he wins because Chinese love gambling. So Sammo really loves gambling. And so he's got to have those scenes of him gambling and, you know, hey, Fatso, you cheated at this game. They got to beat him up afterwards. So, you know, it's just so Project A is basically a ghost directed by Sammo to finish it type of film, because apparently it's very troubled.
What was the Jackie film that nearly killed him, where he just fell through all those trees?
Armor of God, which was originally directed by Eric Chang, who later joined this group with the My Lucky Stars films. And Eric had directed those first two Aces Go Places movies, and they brought him to Golden Harvest to direct Armor of God, thinking, well, he's going to put Jackie in this kind of Indiana Jones meets Aces Go Places type of film. And the funny thing about Jackie is he gets injured on the most subtle, which seems like harmless stunts, like something your kid might do in the backyard, you know, jump from a roof to a little tree in the backyard or something. Yeah. That's what he did. He jumped off a wall to a tree, fell, a branch broke or something, and then like a rock hit like a hole in his head, and he had surgery and he was out for a while. So when he came back to that film, I think it was like half a year later to finish it, Eric Chang wasn't directing it anymore, even though he had directed portions of the film while Jackie was in the hospital. And there's rumors, and I don't think they're true, but it's a great rumor, that because Alan Tam was the co-star in the film, and Alan Tam was just as big a star as Jackie in the 80s in terms of music. He was like a Paul McCartney of Hong Kong music. And supposedly the rumor is they filmed a If Jackie Dies version of the film.
Like, oh, why? Really?
Like, it was, and I don't think this is real, but it's the best rumor I've ever heard about these films. Like, while Jackie's in the hospital, Golden Harvest pays Eric Chang to, in case Jackie dies, version of Armored God with Alan Tam as the lead.
They need to release that cut.
Oh, I wish it existed. And I know that one of those companies, I think it's 88 Films. I forget if it's 88 or Eureka, is putting out Armored God. I don't think they dug up that version. Mm-hmm. And then there was a rumor going around it played on European TV one time, like accidentally. They always have those crazy rumors, like this version of this film played on cable TV. And
yeah,
it was like one night only and nobody taped it and all that stuff. I don't know what I believe these days.
Yeah. I got to say, I first heard about this film via a Bruce Lee documentary. Mm-hmm. And it was towards the end of it. It might have been, when was Death by Misadventure, John? About
that was 1991. You're probably thinking of the same one I was talking about, Bruce Lee the Legend, which was an official Golden Harvest Bruce Lee documentary where they went back and interviewed his art teacher in Seattle. She still had some of his drawings, and they interviewed Nora Mao, and they had the footage of Game of Death, but with different sound effects.
Right,
because it was edited. I think their version was edited before Robert Klaus made his version. And they at the end, that's when they talk about. And there's other stars like Jackie Chan, because Golden Harvest has to promote itself, of course.
Yeah,
and they had the footage for Winners and Sinners, and that's when I saw that. And I went, oh my god, you know, what are they doing with these films? And they also had clips from Duel to the Death, and I think maybe Zoo, Warriors of the Magic Mountain, which were big Golden Harvest productions at the
time. If it's a scene that they showed, was the one with the midget and his cronies holding up the takeaway fast food store.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that
or Jackie does like the double kick and then he does a backflip back up or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah, that's the scene they showed. And then somebody gets thrown out the window. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. What was the thing called? What was that?
I think it's called Bruce Lee the Legend.
That sounds right.
Because CBS Fox put it out on video to tie it in with, they had put out Big Boss, and except they called it Fist of Fury, and they put out Fist of Fury as Chinese Connection, which were the American theatrical titles.
Yeah.
Right. And then they had Bruce Lee the Legend as sort of tied in with Return of the Dragon, which was Way of the Dragon.
Yeah. I think that's what I was thinking of. And that's where I first saw this one.
Those were the CBS Fox releases.
Okay. So I wonder where I saw it. Must have been on it was somewhere.
Now the funny thing is that documentary was a re-edit of a 1974 Golden Harvest documentary about Bruce Lee, where they were going to feature the Game of Death footage, and it showed up on Amazon Prime, in its original cut. And the fascinating thing about it is there's all the sketches of a Bruce Lee art book with all these sketches he made. I think he was choreographing his fight scenes in sketch art.
Yeah,
and it has Bruce in speaking in Cantonese. This is really hard. Like, I was a little shocked. It was Bruce, because I could recognize his voice, and in his Cantonese language, explaining his philosophy with the choreography and everything. So apparently it was done for some sort of tie-in thing that Golden Harvest never released, and they cannibalized it, reused it for this, or recycled it for this documentary in 74. It's not, I don't think it's in the 87 or 86 Bruce Lee the Legend version. I'd have to watch it again and see if it's in there, but I don't think it is. But it's the one of the only times you can hear his voice in Cantonese.
I thought he spoke in Cantonese in the original films he made.
No, those original language versions are in Mandarin.
I always get them mixed up.
He couldn't speak Mandarin good enough to dub himself in those versions, so that's not him. But he could speak the English. The characters who were going to speak English in the film. So that's why he dubs the black guy in Way of the Dragon.
Yeah.
He dubs the Italian guy. I think he did the mob boss. He did a bunch of them because he could not dub Mandarin. I was also, supposedly they were making Cantonese language versions at the time, even though that wasn't a standard in the industry. And they said he wasn't very good at dubbing himself in Cantonese either. And I don't know how true that really is. I think that's that might have been a misremembrance by Ted Thomas, but he couldn't speak Mandarin good enough to dub it. So that's why you're not hearing his voice in those old films.
Okay. But yeah, there were a lot of scenes I really enjoyed. The the dwarf holding up the takeaway fast food. That was so funny. That was. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the interplay between the five criminals and Cherry Chung. Is it her name, Cherry Chung? Yeah.
Yeah, Cherry Chung.
Yeah. I like the...
or Sherry Chung, I guess you could say. Chung,
yeah. how they were always chasing her and John Sham, yeah, was their brother?
Right. John Sham was the brother.
Always like, leave her alone. She can do this. It was really... Now, who's the guy in there who was tall? He was one of the five. Yeah, good-looking guy.
Charlie Chin.
Okay, that's him, yeah. Because the print I watched had no names at the start, and all the names were in Chinese at the end, so which obviously I can't read that. So there was no English names on there or no English print on there except for an English-named actor. So I had no idea who it was. I actually had to go through the trailer on the DVD and only gave some of the actors' names, not all.
Right.
So, yeah, it was a bit of a struggle.
That's always been a frustrating aspect of appreciating Hong Kong movies if you don't speak Chinese or read Chinese is for America is they don't really fix those credits where we get to know the actors. Because think about what it was like for fans before the internet where we had to just guess and read fanzines and trying to figure out who was who. It was really aggravating. And I remember there was one Shaw Brothers film that I always considered very important when I was a kid because I had taped it off of TV, and it was Five Shaolin Masters, which was called Five Masters of Death on TV. Of course, was it trendy to call something Shaolin back then? It was before Wu-Tang Clan. But they have a great opening credit sequence where they identify the actors and the characters they play.
Yeah.
Here's Fu Xing as, I forget what character he played, but then it was like, here's Wang Longwei as Hung Sai Quan or Fang Shiyu or whatever. You know, it was just like they were all identified. They were easily identified. David Chang is this character. And they were given their own little opening sequence. It was like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. You know, it's like Eli Wallach pops out of the window. Eli Wallach is the bad. Li Bengkleef is the ugly. You know, Clint Eastwood is the good. And it was the exact same gimmick. And that movie helped so much when I was getting into Shaw Brothers films, so I could identify these actors. Okay, that's T. Lung. That's David Chang. That's Fu Xing. That's Chi Quan Chun. You know, it helped a great deal. That's Wang Lungwei. He's always playing villains. You know. It was like, it identified the whole cast and every character they played. And if more of the movies had that, I think it would have been easier for fans, you know, back in the 80s before we had like the internet and everything to kind of help us out a bit.
Yeah. Now, was there, cast your mind back to the film Hard Boiled, the guy who played the police chief?
Yeah.
Was he in this?
Philip Chan. He always played, I think he was a real life cop. So in movies, he always plays cops. I think he's in Van Damme's double. It's the one where he plays twins in Hong Kong.
Double Team? No, Double Impact.
Yeah, Double Impact. Yeah, Double Impact. I think he plays Inspector Chan in Double Impact. So there's like all these hidden gags, but I think he's in that movie. Oh, he's in a lot of films. He's always a police officer, and he's always Inspector Chan, because I think that's what he was in real life. And the funny thing about Hong Kong movies is often when you get the English subtitle versions, especially the old Chinatown prints, the actors are always playing characters named after them. Jackie Chan is always Jackie. Sammo is often playing Sammo. Et cetera, et cetera. And Philip Chan was always Inspector Chan. Didn't matter what it was.
Easy enough to remember, I guess. He was like the Ali Ermi of Hong Kong cinema, you know?
Right. I was trying to think, did any of the Abbott and Costello movies actually call them, were they ever playing Abbott and Costello? But they always had names, you know?
I'm trying to think about Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
I think they had different like character names or
yeah, they could have done. It's been a couple of years since I've seen that one.
It is strange, but I think most of their movies, they're always playing characters instead of using their own names. I never understood why they didn't just use their own names. So Abbott!
It was like the Marx Brothers, you know, they were always,
Rufus and
Rufus or Driftwood. I'll just be Driftwood or
yeah. They just have goofy names. Why not just call them, you know, Chico, Captain Harpo, Spalding. Groucho?
Yeah,
right. You know, then Rob Zombie wouldn't have all these names he could steal.
Exactly. I was gonna say the only reason why those names exist for the fact that Rob Zombie could steal them. You know, see what right. he did later and go, yeah.
give yourself a super boomer credibility, I guess, for Rob Zombie.
yeah.
But yeah, I have noticed that with a lot of Hong Kong movies, they're always playing, you know, they use their real names to play these characters. You know, Chan Wai Man is always Chan Wai Man. Yeah. Sammo Hung's gonna go to Vietnam and destroy a munitions compound.
yeah. Anyway, you got anything else to say on this before we wrap it up and give it a rating?
I would say it's worth checking out if you want to see what was a really booming, exciting time in Hong Kong action comedy, you know, of the 1980s new wave history. But remember, it's not really an action movie. Imagine if Animal House had like three or four really cool action scenes, like a car smash up, cool. In a kung fu fight in a warehouse. And because the one thing I noticed is there's no knockdown drag out fight in this. Like a lot of the fights are interrupted. Like they start, there's a cool stunt, but they're interrupted. You know, there's no real finality to the fights.
Yeah.
And it seems like Sammo corrected this when he made Wheels on Meals with Jackie Chan and Yen Mu in Spain, where he has like that great fight between Jackie and Benny the Jet Urquidez. Yeah. Almost like, okay, I didn't give you a really good Jackie fight in Winners and Sinners, so here's the greatest fight you'll ever see Jackie Chan in. There, happy now, audience. You know, it's like I'm gonna put the kid to work. You know,
the one film I do remember seeing, but I have not seen for many years, but I really, really enjoyed it, was Dragons Forever.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, and that was a rematch of Jackie and Benny the Jet Urquidez.
Yes,
wearing all that makeup and the weird, you know, the weird wig and everything.
Yeah. But it was also the one that had Jackie, Sammo, and Yuen Biao together.
That's probably the most balanced, like between Wheels on Meals, which is Jackie and Yun and Sammo. And Sammo doesn't even fight in Wheels on Meals. He has no fight scenes. Oh. But between that and Dragons Forever, I think even though Wheels on Meals has the great fight with Jackie and Benny the Jet, Dragons Forever is a better movie. It's better balanced. It has a better mix of action and comedy. Like, it doesn't let you get bored. Like, the Wheels of Meals comedy goes on too long. Winners and Sinners, a lot of the comedy can go on too long for a viewer, particularly not accustomed to this. But Dragons Forever, it's funny. Then there's a fight. Then it's funny. Then there's a fight again. Then there's another great comedy kung fu sequence. And then there's more humor. And then there's action. And it's like some of the best fights you'll see. And out of a Hong Kong movie that year, really great stuff. I think in retrospect, that one holds up better than a lot of them. He hit a good peak there, I think.
Yeah. That was what, 88, 89?
I think it was 89. It might have been 88. It was like the last good year for Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Because there was like Police Story 2, Project A2, and there was Dragons Forever. And then after that, his stuff is really mixed. It's not as interesting to go back and revisit.
Just real quick before we wind it up, what's Super Cop? I know I've asked you before.
Super Cop is Police Story 3.
Yeah, I thought so.
Miramax bought it, re-edited it, called it Super Cop because they couldn't call it Police Story 3 in American theaters because nobody knew what Police Story was. And it's barely related to the first two and certainly not as good. And so it was just a way to creatively retitle a, you know, adequate, mediocre Jackie Chan movie. It's really come back from Michelle Yeoh. It wasn't really much for Jackie.
No.
He barely fights in the film. So, and my understanding is he cut out fight scenes. There supposedly was a fight between him and Kuo Chui, who was an actor from the Shaw Brothers movies who was making a comeback doing the action choreography in Hard Boiled and playing Mad Dog in that film.
Mm-hmm.
And he was supposed to choreograph the action in Super Cop. Had disagreements with Jackie. Supposedly they had filmed a fight scene between Jackie and Kuo Chui, and it's cut from the film.
Yeah.
Because Jackie doesn't like anybody looking better than him. And instead of just putting action for action's sake in the film, he cuts all the fights. It's like, okay, you're just not going to see me fight. He's always been frustrating his audience and fans for years. And it took them a while to wake up to it as well. Now he's a commie suck up and I don't really care what he does. So next time I see that, that rumor going around Jackie killed in a movie, it's like, I don't care. It's like, oh, what? Did the commies finally do him in? They gave him a Stalin stunt to erase him.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely check it out.
All right. Well, give us your rating out of 10 for this one.
I'm going to say a 7, but with reservations. Like, know that you're seeing something that's more comedy than action, but I think it's an entertaining movie. I could watch it again.
True. I'll give it a 7 as well. And I think it's highly entertaining, as you said. What was the runtime of your one? Mine was 105 minutes. Is it the same as yours, yeah, runtime?
I think mine was 102 minutes.
So you've got the one cut with the Young Turks bit, right?
Yeah, it does not have the Young Turks.
Oh, well, no, mine had it. So now I just got to wonder, because I'm going to get this on Blu-ray, but I've got to make sure it's got that scene in it. I don't want this cut.
I don't know if the Eureka version has it. The Eureka version should be the most complete ever. Like, they'll have – what's great about Eureka, and some people complain about this. I don't know why. I don't think they understand how Golden Harvest was so loosey-goosey with their – with their different cuts for different markets. Like, there's different versions of all their movies, it seems. Yep. Eureka, they put out this version of Dragons Forever. There's every known version of the film on there. They put out, I think, Millionaire's Express that way. And I imagine if they're going to bother with doing this Lucky Stars box set, which I don't have yet, they probably got every possible alternate version of Winners and Sinners on there. Yeah, so it's got to have the Young Turks bit.
I want the Lucky Stars box.
Another cool thing, because Eureka is a British company, music clearances for England, like countries like England and Germany, not as bad as they are for America. America apparently is just sky high if they wanted to put that on a, like, say, the Fox DVD. So yeah, it's definitely more likely to be on that Eureka version. And I'm sure there might be one of our listeners with the Eureka box that said, yeah, it's on here. What are you talking about?
Cool.
You know, so I don't know.
I'll check it out.
I'm going to buy it. I'll find out.
Oh, I'll just go to blu-ray.com. Yeah, one of the few times is actually useful, because I'll give the information on there. But
probably give you all the stats.
Yeah, hopefully. There'll be somebody in the forum going, don't buy it, it's cut.
It's missing 2 seconds and it's got an audio drop.
Yeah.
It's got an audio drop with the midgets holding the gun, you know.
Oh, man, that was so funny, that part. But all right. Well, we'll wrap it up. And
what are you giving it?
Oh, I gave it a 7.
7, okay.
Yeah. And I would recommend it as well. Like John said, it's don't expect a ton of fighting. It is more of a comedy film, but the fight scenes are in it are bloody good.
Yeah. Samuel looks great. It might have been his first modern fighting. I think it was his first film to have that modern fighting stuff. You know, if you don't count Enter the Fat Dragon, which was made like 8 years before. So you know, it's definitely that 80s Sammo in full effect right there.
Yeah. Well, this won't be the last time we do a film with Sammo and Jackie. I mean, we got to do Dragons Forever.
Yeah, we have to do that. That's going to be a great one.
That's sitting in my Blu-ray, in my Amazon cart, the big limited edition box set of Dragons Forever. I'm like, oh.
Oh, yeah, I got it too. It's a corker. And also, we'll have to do another Richard Ng movie. We're going to do Private Eyes.
Oh, of course. It's just so hard to come by these days. I mean, I know you've got it, but it's very hard to come by.
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing. I don't know why they're so protective of that in terms of not keeping it in print. It's one of Golden Harvest's most popular movies. And you would think something that was that popular in Hong Kong, they would just keep it in print eternally. And not really the case.
I really, really thought, and we better wrap it up in a minute, I really thought the Eureka would have been the one to have, you know, gotten onto that Huey Brothers box set after they'd gone out of print,
to make
Private Eyes, Chicken and Duck Talk. What was that one that they did where they were in the newspaper? The newspaper.
The Front Page.
The Front Page. Yeah, all those sorts of films. Making Valley, Mr. Boo, all those ones.
Well, the problem is foreign markets are not as receptive to straight comedy as they are to the action stuff. They want, it's got to be the gangster action, like it's got to be a Ringo Lam or John Woo movie, or it's got to be Kung Fu or modern fighting, like a lot of Jackie and Sammo stuff, but they don't want to do like straight comedy. I think they're scared they might take a bath on it, and they might. Michael Hui is not very well appreciated as he should be in America or England. Like, no one cares, because just too bad, but you know, that's just the way the market is.
Yeah. All right. We'll wrap it up and say adios. I'll copy this week.
Peace out.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.